middle of the pin, which where the bullet would be much bigger than the pin by itself. And I would make the visualization of it on a paper and to experience.
This is 2WGB.
Oh, absolutely. I agree with you. On paper, that would be fine. It wouldn't work in real life.
Right. So, the reason I dropped it is because I was told that I would never get a patent for it. I could be frozen for three years, and then I would get a paper saying that I'm obligated to the secrecy, so I don't care. And to experience.
Well, that's why you develop it and you release it. So you don't have to worry about being told you can't do it because it's going to be a military secret. And everybody, there you go.
But yeah, I did. I did publish most of it. Right. Yeah, I did. Anyhow, what are you going to be doing tomorrow?
Oh, I don't know. We finished up. I just put a new rifle scope on a friend of mine's. Sort of an antique weapon, but put a real modern scope on it and put a nice scope on it. It's magnificent. It has stadium quality and everything. Good stuff. That was fun.
Is everyone still in business? I've heard another station, John.
Okay, I didn't hear anybody. AC2WQB. Breaking station. Pick it up.
Is Edelman still in business?
Is he still in business?
Edelman's on Long Island?
Gee, I don't know. It's a long time since I was there, but that was a great place. A lot of nice stuff. And their little range downstairs is very convenient. But I don't know if they're still in business.
Okay, sorry to break in.
That's okay. No problem. How old is the weapon?
Manufactured 1917. The Winchester, bolt action, nice weapon, all sporterized, and still in top shape, rifle in perfect shape. Beautiful piece of equipment.
Wow. And what was the shape, you say?
Excellent. It looks like it's never been fired. There's not a spot, a nick, nothing. It has a nice Monte Carlo stock, which is old. It's not a military issue. The barrel's been uncovered. There's no wood on top. Just the bluing is in perfect shape. I'm telling you, this thing is excellent quality.
Wow. Yeah, well, anything that is a high level of technology and is kind of unique, something that I love to look at it and examine it and talk about it. Yeah. So what kind of scope did you put on it?
A sight, 10 power. With stadia and illuminated reticles. Gorgeous.
Did you try to shoot from it?
No, it's a 30-06, so I wasn't going to fire that in my garage. Absolutely not. But he's taking it out on the range. He's shooting, I think, Wednesday. He's got a competition.
How he would be able to get used to it, because by checking up, he would be able eventually to train himself to the competition.
Well, he has more experience than I do at shooting, and I've got a lot. He's got a tremendous amount of rounds under his belt. Wednesday now, he'll probably sight in the morning. And, you know, prove the scope out. Probably it started like 250 yards, somewhere around there. But I think he shoots at 600 yards in the competition. I'm not sure. Pro standard 180 grain. And what's he gonna be shooting at?
A 2,000 mile Lincoln Nebraska Lincoln.
Standard target. At 600 yards, it's probably gonna be 3x4 or something like that.
Well, I'm positive. I love arms. I love touch them. I love look at them. I love to understand how they work. But shooting, you know what? Shooting is boring.
Oh, not with these guys. You gotta see these guys shoot. They get pretty excited. Don't forget, these are guys who, when they load their own ammunition, they're not weighing the grains of gunpowder. They're counting them.
Wow, that's a mastery.
Oh, yeah, they're totally out of their mind. Imagine doing that with 1,000 rounds per day. Oh, my God.
It reminds me of the guy with the boat. He's spending $15,000 a year to be on a boat for one time a year.
Yeah, it must be very expensive now, because when I was shooting, we'd shoot 1,000 rounds, and they were about 20 cents a piece. Now, from what I understand, they're over a buck.
Yeah, also, at the time that you were shooting, probably there was not such a strict law about the gun control.
Yeah, licensing long guns had just come in when I was ending, and about maybe 5 years later, then I stopped shooting. But, yeah, that deterred a lot of people, because at those times you could carry the gun, and as long as you had it in a pouch or a sack, you could walk in the street with it, throw it in the car, nobody said anything, going out to the range. Now, because of the shirt-offs and idiots that we have, there's no end to it.
Well, one of the things that the communist country were able to keep very tight their population is that they didn't have the right to have an arm. And one of the good things about America is that when the nation of this country didn't agree with something, government must have to deal with greater number of the weapons than the whole population of the United States.
Oh, yeah, well, with collectors like I was, I had a magnificent collection, and multiplied up by thousands and thousands of collectors and people who aren't collectors but shooters. There's a lot of guns in this country, without a doubt. But we also have a lot of morons that, use them improperly, and a government that doesn't know how to manage them, so we got trouble.
Well, it's good to know that people not only have the most perfect economical system in the world, but also have something that they can pull out if eventually there will be any foreign power or domestic power that would try to impose to them some of the things that they generally wouldn't like to.
Well, I think one of the large reasons that the Japanese never invaded the west coast of America was because they knew the reaction from the American citizens and what it would have been like. So, you know, they chose Hawaii to make their debut.
Well, Hawaii, let's say the Ukraine and the small island that they were able to get a hold of. Question. Wasn't it that they never meant to go to U.S.? All they wanted is just Hawaii?
Oh, absolutely not. That was a methodical move to carry on throughout all of those islands so that we would not have a base to attack Japan when it came time for them to make the move here. Oh, yeah.
Well, Japanese are pretty much pretty smart people, but it was great stupidity. In the history of the world, there was never a situation where any power Kudo, Queens, United States of America.
Well, I don't know. The German thing was a different story. The European theater was different. No, the Japanese, look, we caused that to happen. All right, I didn't, you know, the Americans didn't like it. We didn't put up with it, so we crushed them. But we really caused that by forcing them to look elsewhere for the resources they needed. So that's why they went into Burma, and, well, you know the story. So by us policing them and giving them hell in China and stuff like that, it sort of forced their hand.
That's a spook. One is American Way, which is we have a power, we have a technology, we have a men, and we have our policy. We have something that we want, and we want to go further. And there is something else. Russians, they don't know what they want. Only Tsar knows what he wants. And the rest of them is just a follower. And to exchange.
Yeah, and that's the issue. When the Tsar walks in circles, all the people follow him in a circle because none of them can think independently. So, that's their issue. But Japanese, industrious, very industrial thinking place. Hard workers. They did some amazing things. But, you know, the people rave about, like, Zero. Okay, but that happened to be designed by an American engineer, that plane, but he couldn't sell it. They bought it, and it performed very well.
It's a huge difference between Japan and their production and America and their production. Everything, based on my personal opinion, is coming to the end. I spoke to my friend, Japanese friend, when she was in my house 2 days ago, and we both agreed. American greed made the first step, and that's what you were sometimes opposing. NAFTA was first Trojan horse to open up the market to other the products. There should be Mexico, we should not have illegal immigrants, and we should be happy because they would find it a job that Americans created for them in Mexico. And it was a Trojan horse. Because the greed of the rich was just creating this law for the purpose of pulling out with it. They didn't think about Mexico, they thought about China, and now we have what we have. Nobody can stand the competition, even Japanese. And to assume.
You said something like, I said something against American greed, and no, I said that's what capitalism is all about. It's greed in motion. Oh, absolutely. And if you want to learn about the mistakes that are made in history with Rockefeller, Carnegie, and when they tried to force Roosevelt, Teddy Roosevelt, to sway his opinion on certain things, and read that history. That's pretty interesting when you talk about if you want to call them robber barons or whatever, but there's a lot of history right there.
Of course you're right. The greed and emotion is the basis for the capitalism. That's what it is. But when you lose the power and the greed is bigger in its proportion than emotion, then there is a time to either rethink it or losing it. So right now, my friend is from Japan, is pretty high and pretty much oriented in the structure, social structure. He says, this is what's going on. And Georgia.
Well, you know, he may know what's going on in Japan. I mean, that's where he lives, and he's got a lot of history there. I don't think he has a clue what's going on in America. But don't forget, we have to function within the world economy and the world politics. And evidently, we're not good at that right now.
Well, John, I'm going to give you an example. I went to Home Depot today, and I was looking for some solution for the end. And there used to be a big bank with the ground rules that I have used, no longer, because we're very much inconvenient to the other competitors, even to the same company. So they decided to either make a small bank and sell them, or just have other chemicals for it. Let me try.
Wait a minute, what are you describing? Bags of what?
Of granules. So you just pull them, thread them, and they will clean the ends.
Okay, you pour them and spread them and they clean something. I have no idea what you're talking about.
And feelers.
What's that? Famiki. Okay.
Okay, so I went today and they didn't have what I was looking for, but I have had a container, like a 1 gallon container or 2 gallon container with liquid in it, and a very nicely made with plastic and the nozzle and the hole and everything together cost $7. Okay, so I paid $7, I came home, my wife immediately went to the internet and she found out that this thing doesn't work. It's just a deterrent that works for 5 minutes and then doesn't work any longer. But anyhow, Americans go there, they see $7, what can you buy for $7? And they see a nice package over there, and they buy it. So they spend $7, let's say $3 goes to the Home Depot. Then we have a $3 left. Then we have a shipping. Then we have a reseller. Then we have the Chinese manufacturer. Then we have a Chinese guy. So let's say $1 is the cost of the product in China. Then let's say 5 cents is being paid for the labor. The rest is, so from that $1, they have to have a 50 cents of profit at least. So 50 cents is left over for material cost and the labor. No American company can handle it. So they keep selling junk, we keep spending money on it, and our economy is just patiently trying to take that hit before it collapses. And to adjust.
Yeah, okay, they make junk, we buy it, and we support them making more junk. Yeah, I understand the concept. Of course, you buy the liquid, put it into a well-made pumpkin product, and it should work. Okay, so the container failed, not the product.
This product, the container could be used for anything else if you have the chemical, but if you buy the American-made chemical, you probably would be paying like $20 for the same or whatsoever, just for the liquid. That's why there is so much stuff on the auctions, and you can buy things that cost $300,000, $400,000, $500,000 for $50. Because the manufacturers who, because of their greed, move to China in order to make more money, they don't even need all of the infrastructure, all of those the lines of production or testing measurement devices, because they're going to have new gear. And they were going to be having expenses that would be deducted because they are still American companies, but leaving money with China.
Oh, yeah, I absolutely agree with you, but you have to think that the worst-case scenario, that first of all, the manufacturers here don't want to manufacture because they have union labor, real estate is expensive, taxes are expensive here, so the bottom line looks bad. So what do? They pick up a phone, and they'll say to them, listen, do you have this or this product liquid? Yeah. Do you have it chlorinating 10%? Yeah. Okay, put it in a container and send it to us. They don't bother moving a factory over there, maybe a representative, but that's it. It costs them nothing but a phone call. No employees, no taxes being paid for real estate, no factory running. So, yeah.
I'm not against Chinese. They going through the time of perfecting their products, taking most of the technologies without being paid for it, because Americans come with those technologies and lines of production and their supervision to China. And within, with 1.5 billion Chinese that we have right now, we could say that soon they're going to be doing a very good job. And because of the overbalance or disbalance of American greed, we're just corrupting the economy of the world. And good shit.
Well, we got a lot of partners helping us out to do that. You know, the rest of the world, too, it's not just us. But the Chinese right now, you're right, they're in a matrix right now, which is in flux, and they're finding their way to become an industrial producer, and they're going to do well. Will prices rise? Sure. That price is going to go up because the people are going to start demanding more. You know, we've had this conversation before. And eventually, it's going to maybe not level out, but it'll become much more competitive. We'll meet up with the people that make their prices rise, which is going to happen.
Yeah. It's strange how only a few years where at the end of 1999 there was that NAFTA start to fly out. So today, which is 2014, you have changed the life of 1.5 billion of Chinese using our pocket. And to
Asia. Yeah, we've changed the lives of 350 million Americans in the process. And we brought down the rest of the world with us. So there's a lot of blame to be laid around, and there's plenty of people to blame. Yeah, that's for sure.
But the only thing is that we were the trigger point for Chinese to make better, and we were the trigger point for us not necessarily to make better.
Well, there's a lot of people who would argue with you on that, you know, that NAFTA was a good thing, and I don't think it should have been done. But we had to get into the world economy somehow. So when we opened NAFTA, of course, people that were producing products for that horrible company that they didn't allow to go bankrupt, GM, they moved plants to Mexico so that they could make wiring harnesses and things like that in Mexico and eliminate all of the union work here. So, you know, and then what do? When they fail, we bail them out. What do they learn from that? Absolutely nothing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, America was a dream for many people around the world just to be here. I was lucky one. And I would love to see America prospering the same way as they did when the break-in was. And to Asia.
Well, a lot of people would argue with that, but yeah, Americans liked him, and we all felt good being American. But did he do everything exactly right? I don't think so. I mean, trying to break some of the unions in the way he did was unfortunate. Some of the controls that he eliminated, what do they call it? All the rules they had, he wanted to start deregulation. He started deregulating a lot of things, and that affected prices here in America.
John, yeah, we beat the bushes over it. The switching to Coleman. Yeah, I'm almost ready to start again with all of those experiments and reading a lot. The part of the conversation that I have had with Ray was...
With who?
Yeah, with Roy was behavior of fundamental particles due to the photon interaction. So the major problems that we have had is that I keep saying that frequency of 300 say to 500 megahertz is the frequency that interacts with the matter, and especially at the power level, it directs quite similar to that what gamma radiation does, although it's not quite what I wanted to say, because Roy would oppose it and he would be right. When we have a photon, whether the photon is at 300 megahertz or it is at 5 nanometers wavelength, it's the photon, so that would be the pure energy. But ultraviolet makes the temporary fusion of the particles that would be the molecule disassociation, temporal one. The infrared makes the molecule vibration, the microwave makes molecule rotation, and it said that visible light doesn't do anything. Also, it said that the radio frequency that we use for our communication doesn't do anything, which actually is in question for me.
So, if you look at an MRI machine, and the frequency that you're using at great power doesn't seem to harm the human body. So at what level and at what frequency are actually doing the harm? They have some information on that. It would be good for people in a microwave oven, but I think other energies might be quite acceptable.
So the nuclear magnetic resonance is also capable of transmutating the materials, and there was this right transposition of tetrahedral ferrite in that military experiment that I was referring to from 1986. But definitely we have molecular responses to the radiation. We could also ask ourselves, what is a molecular vibration? What do we mean for this? I would say that it's a diatomic molecule of two spheres connected to the spring. If we would like to visualize that as a mechanical model, then the molecule vibrates and the atom moves towards and away from each other at a certain frequency. That would be actually the interaction of ultraviolet. That's what I would name it. But also, we have the infrared and in the wavelength, the infrared is longer than the visible light or ultraviolet. And then we have very much similar spring-like movement. And a microwave would give us very much spring-like movement. Then we could say, hey, how about re-examine what's going on at 300 megahertz? And to HGM.
Okay. But without ionizing radiation, I don't think you have the problem damaging human tissue. Now, exactly where that ionization takes place, and is it only DNA, what, I don't know. But that's what I believe. As long as it's not an ionizing radiation, I don't think you're going to have a problem with it. But, you know, research is still going on, because there are other people out there that are making claims that it does. Now, with your instrumentation and all of what you're doing with those powders and the radiance, the RF energy and all that, well, maybe you can move atomic material or an atom or a couple of atoms, all right? But whether or not you can partake in the destruction or breaking them down, like you're talking about, you know, 30 milliwatts, 30 watts, I don't think that's possible.
Well, I've got the response from the meta. Now, what is left over is confirmation and then eventually interpretation. But yes, beyond the reasonable doubt, for myself, I have proved the interaction of the matter at frequency of 420, 430 megahertz with the photon and to HGM.
Oh, well, I'm well aware of that. That's what you claim. And, you know, that's the evidence is going down. So now that you're going to be reestablishing your test with the Coleman device, you might be able to start hooking that up to get any power out of it besides whatever elements that you think you're finding there with all of your instrumentation. You know, you get all that stuff working and have it all that doesn't have to be accurate. You know, what you're doing just has to be close. I wouldn't worry about being within, certain microns or micromorphs. If you get a result, you know, you're on your way.
Indeed, John, indeed. I consider my experimentation as a property of the human race. I don't intend to have any patent of it, but I do intend to screw up all of the scumbags that are sucking from our blood and chase him.
Well, should be welcomed by most of the people, but maybe not. Depends on what injury happens to them. So not only the major companies, but small individuals may be working. But look, let the dust cloud settle wherever it has to settle. Science is science. And there's no going back once you go forward.
Yeah, if I succeed, if I don't succeed, that's fine. You know what? If I don't succeed, it's even less trouble to me, or it's less headache to me. Enter it here.
Well, you should desire success for what you're doing, and most of your success will be the fact that you're educating yourself in things that you have no idea of what's going on, and you're learning. That's what we're supposed to be doing. You know, that's a never-ending process. You can die as dumb as you're born, but you choose not to, so that's a good thing.
So, being in the crowd is a safe way to exist. Being one gray in the sand is a good way to be invisible. I would love to be invisible. Enter it here.
KC2WCB. Oh, I agree with you. And that's why I like my ability to be invisible. And nobody tells me what to do or how to do it. I do whatever I want. I don't care who it is. So that's how I enjoy it. You do it a little differently, but you're basically doing the same thing.
Yeah, John, increase the power.
Okay, how about now?
I can still listen to you on the input. Anyhow, John, what is the project that you're doing now?
Right now I'm building a 900 megahertz antenna that's approximately, maybe it's 4 inches long, and I'm doing some studies with that, and I've got my, I have a very special meter that I'm monitoring that frequency with, and it's a flux meter for reading and measurements, and I'm using that to determine hot spots on the antenna and changes in length and capacitance of the antenna and devices, and basically it's boring stuff.
What is boring stuff depends for whom? So what stage are you at?
I just completed the antenna, and it's a back mount. I'm designing a little ground plate for it, which is probably going to be a copper plate or maybe a steel plate. I'll put it on that. And then I'm going to start feeding signals into it and make the measurements. I'm going to do some near field work and some far field work, roughly about 900 megahertz.
How do you picture your far field experiment?
My far field experimental work will probably be at about, let's see, 10 meters, somewhere around there. That's probably the furthest distance I'll be from it. And I'm also developing the same antenna for my dish, a 36-inch dish, which is going to be located outside, and I will have a receiving device on that, which will take measurements also.
Well, I have a problem with what you're saying. So you said 10 meters, and that 10 meters would be 30 feet. Question is, what level of power you're going to be using, and where is the border between far field and a near field?
Well, the near field, I will find out when I start making the tests, which I should be able to determine the near field and the effects of present body here at the Deerfield. I'll be working at probably no higher than 500 milliwatts, more than likely 300 milliwatts.
Well, 300, 500 milliwatts in 900 megahertz is pretty high power.
Yeah, it's not bad. I could generate 10 watts if I needed to, but I should be able to work with that, or maybe lower. I won't go over 500, that's for sure. I may be able to do it at 100. I haven't tried it yet, so I'll see.
Okay. Well, you would be able to generate the signal directly from your signal generator, and that could be in microwatt region.
Yeah, I don't want to go down that low. I'm going to try to stay in the milliwatt range so I can get some dependable and consistent work in the microwatts. The issue is a little different because your body capacity. You have to be careful where you stand and make sure you stand in the same place and make the same measurements. You know, it's a little hairy.
Yeah, I got it. I understand what you're saying. Yeah. That could be interesting. I'm going to take a break for a few minutes. Are you going to be staying on the radio?
Yeah, I should be here. I've got a few things I'm doing on the computer. I'm running a few things in AutoCAD that I have to complete. And yeah, I should be around.
Okay. So, I'll be back.
Okay. She'll be listening.
WPB, this is W2H.
2HUH. Yeah, good evening, almost morning.
Radio, radio. I turned on the, at work. Person told that, hope all is well, and, good opening.
Oh, yeah, everything's fine. Dick had an issue which he had to resolve, and when I talk to him, we'll find out what exactly is going on. But other than that, yeah, everybody's okay.
Okay. It started raining over here. I was walking the door. Got in the house and it was raining.
Yeah, welcome home. Walking stuff. Oh, boy. Yeah, last night and tonight, the scene hasn't been too good. Last night it was all right for a while. I was checking the iridium flares, but I was just everything was a mess.
I was playing with these really wide field binoculars that I have. And, I don't think they were official iridium flares. I could be wrong, but I didn't bother. I forgot to look. But I saw, for a couple of, I'll call them semi-flares, but I saw it moving in the sky, it was really bright, and I said, wow, look at it. It actually got so dim I couldn't even see the flip side. That's what they said, the other thing. So basically, they were doable with the regular eyesight, but it caught my eyes that they were so bright. I'm not sure if they were actual events or if it was what I've seen. I've been looking up so much with the binoculars. By accident.
Yeah, I had a sighting. I think it was Wednesday night. I saw a meteor, and I was not looking up. I was walking in the yard, and my eyes were sort of in that direction, but level, like looking at the horizon. It was so bright it caught my attention, and the trail looked like I took an arm's length. It was probably maybe like 20 inches long, the street, by the time I caught saw the flash or the light, whatever it was, in fact, my eye was up, and I saw that, and boy, it was bright, but it was not an original flare. This was a meteor. This thing was falling ass.
Yeah, I have it before the smoke, before the radio, during that transmission radio.
Yeah,
it
was no audio, no trip in the carrier, nothing to it, no RF, it was quiet. Is that the same radio you usually have trouble with?
Yes, this is garbage can radio, and I had it for so long that I never, you know, I fixed it. Never worked at all, actually. And, you know, it's not a storage device. It doesn't transmit one out of every 10, or sometimes one out of every 6, it's very. I've been out in the backyard of the city, and we have 20, 30 transmissions, and it's passed out on that, somewhere in that ratio. And I smacked the hell out of this thing, and instead of getting it, both went up, actually, trying to monitor it.
Yeah, and what I find interesting is it's perfectly clear, the audio is crisp, the RF is fine, and it just doesn't work. There's no crackling, there's no sign of it coming, it just doesn't want to respond. That's very strange, interesting. Maybe you have some forewarning. Maybe you should put it on the bench, key it up, and monitor it with the receiver, and see what happens. Maybe it'll go out after it warms up, or maybe you could probe around. But maybe you've done all that. But it doesn't happen that often.
Okay, what I did was I keyed it up 100 times in a row, and I got RF PO 100 times in a row. Did that twice. I'm back to it. Once it transmits, it transmits. You know, it doesn't stop. I haven't tried putting it in the oven or the refrigerator yet. Or the freezer, rather. I sprayed it with the free spray on a couple of areas. It didn't matter. I have a funny suspicion that it might be an IF bunker. A transformer. Other than that, I have no idea. I don't have a clue. Because it never faults when I'm monitoring those or inside the radio at all. I've never seen it do it.
Oh, I get it. It only faults when you use it. Oh, good. Well, maybe put up to a dummy load and look at the RF level. If it varies and if it responds equally every time you do that, if you've done that already. So, it sounds like you spent a lot of time trying to troubleshoot that. I don't think it's going to be a broken connection on the printed circuit board, the solder. And I'm having trouble believing it's a coil. Because when you tap on the radio, or I'm not sure it'll slip around with a plastic probe. And if you haven't been able to do it, I don't think it's going to be a fracture or a hairline crack or anything like that. A capacitor that arcs over or something strange.
So maybe it's a cap that's going. So the reason why I was trying to blame a coil was say Buck Loop didn't lock it. That was one of the original problems. And then I got it to lock and I was using it ever since then. And I kind of thought maybe it was one of the same things happening again. Although I've never heard it happen again. Original problem, same luck, blue block, which is in the
middle. Okay, yeah, so you fixed that one, and that's a rock solid fix. It only happens on transmit. Now, if you leave it on the desk and you're listening to it as a monitor, you never hear it cut out?
No, I never hear it cut out. That's more like a step. Hit the up and down button on the mic, but no. On receive, I've never heard it before. It's been a same luck, blue fix.
Wow, that's a mystery. And you know that it's not when you key up that it goes to a different frequency because you were monitoring it and it was sending the PL out and it made its transmission. So you got positive proof that it was on frequency at a PL. And intermittent finals usually aren't that intermittent.
Oh, I agree. Actually, my YL just came home too. So, can I get back to you a little bit later, John, and put yourself on another subject, if that's okay?
Oh, absolutely. Do what you gotta do. No problem. And welcome home to your wife. All right. Talk to you on down the log. I may be around. Please do what you need.
Okay, John. Thank you for hanging in there with me. I'll catch you later.
Everything is good.
While the city swims in 2HH.
2HH? KC2WGB.
Hello, John. She runs the double shift. We're trying to troubleshoot this radio. Over the radio.
Yeah, maybe that's the wrong way. Maybe we should troubleshoot it with a gun. There you go. You know, I was watching earlier, I don't know if you ever do it, but these sites like very, very, very funny automobile crashes and stuff like that, and leads you into a lot of these different cameras and cars that are traveling. And I've got to give it to the Russians. They have some magnificent accidents at very high speeds. Have you ever seen any of that stuff?
Actually, but, you know, the list is endless of what you can watch on. So I should punch in Russian car accidents?
No, it's DRRY three times videos. And when you punch that in, it'll come up with different videos. You start clicking on the ones we'll say terrible car accidents, don't watch, and things like that. And you click on that. Most of them sound like Russians to me. What, huge trucks, fire engine cars. It's like nobody knows how to drive over there. I mean, they smash. The cars are exploding. It's not like Bend-a-Bend. It's unbelievable accidents.
Areas you're allowed to drive at high rates anyway.
No, it looks like they're doing maybe, you know, 100, 120 kilometers, which is like 60, 65, maybe somewhere around there. And they're divided highways with the K barrier in the center, most of them. And then some of them are town shots where they're going through regular roads at maybe 40, 50 miles an hour. I mean, head-on collisions, like an everyday thing.
Oh, I know. That should bring the safety, airplane and train safety statistics down, make them better. So that you can have a lot of car accidents. Make those things come on.
Well, yeah, that's a good point. Because if airplanes crash like these people crash, we have no airplanes flying at all. These are like one after another. And I'm just sitting here, and some of them, I know people are getting hurt. Others are seeing people flying out of the cars or flying off these motorcycles at tremendous speed. And they get up and walk away. Incredible.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's the punchline. Getting up and walking away after that. I've had a couple of non-car accidents like that where I was amazed I was able to get up and walk away.
Yeah, I've seen a few people that were hit by cars. Only one of them actually got up and walked away. And didn't seem to be injured. But no, I stopped and asked. But the other ones, the people weren't getting up. I mean, you get hit by a car. The glancing blow, that's one thing. But if you're in the front getting hit by the grill structure, chances of you getting, knowing speed to get away, be able to walk away, that's rare, I think.
Yeah, I would say so. Most of the time, to surprise myself, which is not as good as it's important, I was riding my racing bicycle too fast for the first time yesterday, and I was coming upon a, a green light to a red light, so I jammed on the brakes, but I squeezed too hard on the front. I did both rear end front, but I squeezed too hard on the front too quickly, too soon, and I flew over the handlebars and wound up, with a somersault over the bicycle onto the ground. I was surprised with just a mild scratch on my, hand. I was able to get back up, and I was ready for the ride again. I mean, I was very impressed with that.
Yeah, that would have cured me from riding bike. Now, what was that, one of those rice grinders, like a ninja?
No, I'm sorry. I said bicycle, or did I say bike? But I meant a rice burner. I'm talking about an actual pedal bicycle. I was probably doing around, I might have been doing around 30. Probably don't do much more than 30. Could have been a little bit.
Oh, that's bad enough. Yeah, that's actually a velocity. so 30 and over the handlebars. Man, that's rough.
Especially at my size.
Well, the fact that you rolled right or whatever you did, you just had a little scratch on your hand. And then you get back up on the bike. You're kicking the bike, correct? Wouldn't you get on it right away?
I'm so happy that I didn't go through the red light, get hit by a car or a truck or something else, and I flipped over the bicycle like a stunt, like a professional stuntman. And I was so happy that I was still conscious and not bleeding to death or dead or with broken limbs or whatever. I mean, it was, I can't remember the last time I did a somersault from that type of position. That high, you know, the bicycle seat was kind of high, so I was high up, but it was just totally, I just was totally impressed, and I was able to get right up. Incredible at my size.
KC2WTB. Yeah, and to be folded into that position is just amazing. Do you have a helmet on?
No helmet, no safety gear. It was kind of like exhilaration and a sense of like freedom, I guess. I just I overdid it. I was just riding too fast, so I wasn't paying attention. Good feeling until that happened, but I never stopped riding. I just don't. I won't go down in the parks or whatever. I won't go down hills fast anymore. I won't do any of that. I would ride very conservatively.
So, well, you learned your lesson, that's for sure. Wow, to get flipped with a bike like that. And were there any traffic? Was there traffic behind you, or a chance of you getting hit from the car from behind?
Well, honestly, I don't remember that. I don't recall that at all. I think I was just scared and then impressed that something was wrong with me. And I didn't notice anything else. I'm pretty sure I think I just got back on the bike and went back home. And I said, that's enough for today.
Okay, that'll do it. Show's over. Time to go home. Wow. Yeah, telescopes are much more safe.
Yeah. And annoying praying mantis.
I mean, think about it. Worst thing can happen, you spin it around and hit your head or something, you know. Other than that, you're safe. Maybe you need a seatbelt or keep it falling up the porch. But stick with astronomy. Stay with the bikes.
Yes, absolutely. So, let's see. Well, a symptom, medical symptom. My latest symptom is I have pressure in my head. Not like a bad headache or anything like that, but kind of a constant pressure. Front of my head to the side of my head. I think it's both sides. And my blood pressure is good. My blood sugar level is good. I have no idea what it is yet. So that's what I'm experiencing. And also some noise and pressure in my head. I'm not sure what that's all about.
Wow. Any nosebleeds or anything like that? Now you're saying your pressure is good. Don't have a high level of salt in there, do you?
No, there's no added salt in any of my meals, but sometimes it's unavoidable. And I take blood pressure medication to get the hemoglobin. And my blood pressure looks good. Pulse is slightly elevated, but blood pressure always looks good. And I think I answered all your questions. The only other thing I got off of about the same time, 3 or 4 weeks ago, was the war celebrant.
Okay, do you think that might have a reaction possibly? Does aspirin relieve the pressure at all?
Well, maybe I shouldn't take a whole, but I actually take a whole aspirin every day.
Yeah, that's a whole aspirin, an adult aspirin, not the 81 milligrams. Yeah, I used to do that, and I wound up switching to 81 milligrams, and it made a difference for me. I noticed that my body was starting to show a difference. As soon as I corrected that, that stopped. So that's why I was very confident. Let's get a small bottle of it. Just see if that makes a difference for you. Interesting. Because aspirin even opens up the blood capillaries, increases the flow. I would do it to see if it has any effect anyway.
I'll be right back. I'm going to the radio.
Okay, then we'll see what Judy does. I'm sure you know about all those things. You should get a girlfriend, or a dog, or maybe a cat, or shoot yourself. Well, I'm sure you know all about that.
He's got cocksucking Leslie. I love it when Leslie gets under the beaker for 3 hours and talks about bullshit. Everybody else loves it too.
But at least you can understand what he says. It's not like when you speak, it's just all the story. That's kind of silly.
Got cock.
Okay, this is N2HH. How are we sounding?
Question like a bug.
I like squashing the cockroach bugs. Okay. I don't know. I know you've had those medical talks in the wee hours of the night, so. It's really, the headache's not, if you want to call it a headache, it's really not that bad. But, it's like a pressure. And I'm not accustomed to it. I've had them before I started using my CPAP machine, and then I feel good. And, you know, I felt good for many months, and now I'm starting to get this strange feeling. But I'm using getting good therapy with my machine, so I don't know what this is all about.
Okay, and I guess that's because of sleep apnea. Yeah, but I think it pays to question the doctor anyway and see if, maybe he'll want you to go for a scan or something. Oh, I just saw a flash of lightning and some thunder here. Hopefully.
Does that mean you usually shut down, or do you keep operating?
I keep operating because my systems are well grounded. I've been hit a couple of times, but thank God no damage.
Okay, so, okay, we're good. And, I thought I heard, I don't want to overdo this topic, but, I thought maybe you might have heard something, or something along those lines. You never know who, so they might say something like, check this, or try that, and whatever, and you could hit the nail on the head. So I'll let you know what the remedy is or what the solution is when I find out.
Yeah, it'll either be, I guess, CAT scan or MRI, one of those things they'll probably have to do. But yeah, that would be interesting, because you've only had it recently, and you really haven't changed your diet or what you do. It pays to look into, try to find out exactly what that is. When you have the pressure, does anything abate the pressure at all, or if you go to sleep, as you wake up, it's still there?
Sometimes I like to think that after I eat, you know, consume a meal, that I feel better, but not always. And, you know, I can actually wake up with it too.